Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. We're saying goodbye to 2018, saying hello to 2019, and somewhere around the world, they already said hello because they're ahead of us. Now, welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This show is about what matters most in life. Our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. And in this show, I'll bring you the latest research on, what do you guess? Of course, keeping your New Year resolutions. And then I'll talk to Dr. Terrilyn Curry-Avery. He's a creator of Pastology, the cutting edge field that focuses on synergy between pastoring and psychology. We love to hear from you, so call us on the studio. This is a live show, so love to hear from you. And probably your New Year resolutions, 951-922-3532. We'll be right back.
KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
It's coming up. New Year is coming up. New Year's is coming up. And what do you think? Everyone tonight are going to think about what is their New Year's resolution. Because guess what? Tomorrow morning, January 1st, we're all going to start kind of doing and acting on what we promised ourselves to be. So while New Year's resolutions are popular, actually about 40% of people make them. Few people actually succeed at keeping their resolutions. In a series of studies, researchers from the University of Scranton followed 200 people who made New Year's resolution over a two-year period. 77% were able to keep their resolutions 1 week. At a month, 64% reported success. That fell to 50% after 3 months and 46% after 6 months. Only 19% deemed themselves successful in reaching their goal when researchers followed up 2 years later. 19% is still pretty good. While that might not seem like a good success rate, the study found that people who made resolutions were 10 times more likely to actually make a positive change 6 months compared to people who wanted to change but didn't make a New Year's resolution. So there's some evidence that making the resolution is worthwhile. Now, how to make it stick? Beyond tracking success, the researchers were able to draw some conclusions about why some people are successful at keeping resolutions while others aren't. Now, there were some factors that didn't matter, including age, gender, and type of resolution that they made. Now, people who were successful used strategies that are proven effective in a variety of behavioral change. So, it includes stimulus control and avoiding tempting situations. So if you're trying to lose weight, skip the cookie baking party cookies. And if you're trying to quit smoking, don't go to the bar where your friends are chain smoking. Now, researchers also found evidence that rewards help. So if your goal is to lose weight, pledge to buy yourself a new piece of clothing when you hit that 10-pound mark. Now, the most important factor in predicting success was self-efficacy, the belief that in one's ability to get the job done. If you thought you could do it, you probably are going to create the setup that you can. That likely means that you have spent some time thinking about and planning how to achieve the resolution. And also whether resolutions are realistic, such as losing 50 or 70 pounds is admirable, but keeping 20 pounds off a whole year is probably a better place to start. And one of the most recent studies, the findings showed that people really slipped quite a lot. That most successful resolve slipped in January, actually right at the beginning. But they discovered that a slip, a momentary relapse in the resolution needed not to be a complete fall. So they picked themselves up and recommitted themselves to the resolution after a slip. So there's one and other important note. Researchers found that people who were successful at keeping their New Year's resolution slipped or made mistakes. In fact, 71% of those people who were successful in their resolution slipped in the first month. Interestingly, people who were not successful slipped at the same rate, but the people who were successful didn't quit after making the mistake. And in many cases, they doubled their efforts after the slip. So they learned from it, moved on, recommitted themselves, and took on the resolution and the goals again. Now, this demonstrates that persistence is always the key. Didn't we know that already? Of course. Now, the take-home message, making a New Year's resolution is useful exercise and with the proper planning and attitude is an effective way to make a change in your life. John Hopkins University suggests 6 New Year's resolutions for happy and healthy year ahead. Ready? Go. Place mindful eating. Mindful eating. Don't just gobble it up. Actually, enjoy every bite. Chill out and rest up. Adopt an attitude of gratitude. Find 30 minutes a day to walk. Take the stairs and commit to a 30-day fitness challenge. So one thing that I do is every New Year, I actually sit down and look at every area of my life. And so it's, you know, my career, financial relationships, intimate relationship, radio show with you guys, the TV shows, everything that I have in my plate, everyone who's around me. And I sit down and write what it is that I intend to create next year for the full year. With that person or in that area of my life. And I write it down and kind of store it somewhere. I go ahead and do some planning. Some of the ways that it actually has worked for me is that intentionality of every day working on these on these relationships, or every week working on these relationships. So maybe that maybe one or two area of my life is an action planned where I actually have to reach a goal. Everywhere else is more of keeping up an intentionality of loving and being connected to people, and in what way I want to keep that connection and in what way I want to create that love. And people who might, we have some differences or we've had some clashes, is to complete whatever it was for them that I was holding in my heart and let it go, and you know, send them light and have it all be that they're living a great life and I live a great life. So take on something, take one area of life, or do intentionality on all areas of your life. You can even collage tonight, take pictures from the internet or magazines that are around you, and symbolic level, create something that you hold throughout the day, every day. And you can look at the collage every morning. You can go to sleep looking at it, reminding yourself of who you are and what you really want to create this year. So happy Happy New Year. And together, we're going to keep all the resolutions. Let's create that together. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with Dr. Terilyn Curry Avery, who's a creator of Pestology and the cutting edge field that focuses on synergy between pasturing and psychology. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on the Internet Stream.
Dr. Fujian Zane is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I have Dr. Terilyn Curry Avery with me. It's so exciting to have her with me. I met her in India, and I will tell you all about it. She's the creator of Pestology, the cutting-edge field that focuses on the synergy between pasturing and psychology. She holds a PhD from Hofstra University and a Master's of Divinity from Yale University. She calls herself pestologist, speaker, author, and a retreat leader. Dr. Curry Avery has a unique approach to healing, transformation, and manifestation. Good. We're going to ask her how we're going to manifest all of our New Year's resolutions today. This is what we're going to do. So she places the emphasis on your journey towards sacred intelligence. Welcome to my show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, and it's so great to see you again. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We had so much fun together in India. Yes. We've had Sister Jenna here with us. We've had Dr. Andrea Pennington with us. So we've talked, for people who have been listening, we've kind of talked about our experience, but it was so beautiful. It's just nice to keep talking about it as if, you know, we're going to keep taking ourselves back there, everyone who's listening and viewing us.
Mm-hmm. It was absolutely wonderful, not only because it was an opportunity to see another country, but to meet great people such as yourself and to be able to stay in touch, but really thinking about the ways that we manifest the things that we want in life. I heard you talking all about the New Year's resolutions, and I just think that it was such a powerful experience that I hope our listeners will take heed to all of the things they've been hearing about journey and manifest this for themselves and their lives as well.
Absolutely. So the first question is, You define yourself as pastologist. Tell us what that means.
So the short answer to that is that I'm a pastologist, and I'm an ordained Presbyterian minister. And in my work, I have seen that people have a lot of spiritual healing to do. People need spiritual guidance, and people need to understand psychological processes. So what I do is actually merge those two things together. So I don't proselytize when people come to see me, but I really get to a deep level of dealing with any sort of spiritual wounds that might be there, or for people who are already really spiritually grounded, but sometimes are just a little bit stunted in moving forward. I use their spiritual path to help them walk into the next phase of their life to deal with their healing from that perspective.
So your book, I have your book, it's Sacred Intelligence, the Essence of Sacred, Selfish and Shared. And the type of conversation that you have in this book, it's beautiful. It's taking someone directly and slowly, layer by layer, opening them up into finding their sacred intelligence. So first, let's talk about what is a sacred intelligence.
So I firmly believe that we are all divinely created, and I believe that we are loved unconditionally. And most people forget those things at some point in their lives because they tend to judge who they are based on how the world sees them, as opposed to going internally. So sacred intelligence is really about tapping into your divine inner being, which is yourself, but also with your higher power, and learning to make choices that are going to manifest your greatness. Because if I manifest my greatness, I'm going to then manifest greatness in other people with whom I come into contact with. So it's really about teaching people, how do I listen to that inner voice, that inner sacred voice, not the outside world, not what other people told me I should be or who I think that I am based on those experiences that I've had in my life. I want to help people go back and to remember, who are you? Mm-hmm. Who were you when you first chose to come into this realm? And so I help people to kind of just tap into that part of them.
Now, you're a psychologist, so you have worked a lot with people whose inner voice is dangerous for them to listen to.
Sure.
Because what they call an inner voice, and I want to distinguish between what you're calling an inner voice or something that everybody might hear. So sometimes we know that most of our inner voice is what we hear. I won't call it inner voice because my radio show is called Inner Voice. there are voices inside our own head, not the ones we're hallucinating on, but the ones that are in our head that a lot of times is the interjection of what we've got from our parents, from our teachers, and who the society has been, such as what you said. And then we bring them on, and after years, they're ours. So we actually hear them as if that those voices are disciplining us harshly or kindly. And it's a voice that pushes us to go forward or kind of holds us back. That's not the sacred voice that you're talking about. That's not the sacred intelligence. And how would someone kind of distinguish between the voices that they're hearing and the sacred intelligence one?
So that is a great, great question. And particularly because we are psychologists, because we do know people hear those voices all the time that are, and we're not talking about the hallucinating one. We're distinguishing that. But hear voices all the time, like, you shouldn't do that. Or you're not worthy of that. You shouldn't start your own business. You're going to fail at that. Like all of that. That's an inner critic. Your inner sacred voice is a voice that wants good for you. Because if you create it from a place of love, you understand what abundance is like. You understand self-acceptance. And you understand that we're created for a purpose, not just for ourselves, but anything that I do, whatever I share, however I grow, is for the purposes of helping me, but it's also for the purposes of helping other people. It's not a selfish voice, even though selfish is in the title, and I'll get to that a little bit later when I talk about selfish relationships. But our inner sacred voice wants good for us, and it wants good for other people. Now, the way we distinguish that inner sacred voice is to do something that you talked about in the beginning of the show. He talks about becoming, setting our intentions, and really about becoming conscious of what we're going to do on a daily basis. You have to spend time with that inner voice to be able to distinguish, wait, is this my inner sacred voice who's prompting me to do this? Or are those the old patterns that are coming up, those old thoughts that are guiding me to do this? Because sometimes we have thoughts and behaviors that are based on some impulsive things that we might do, or based on some experiences that we've had that are not good for us, but that voice is guiding us to do it. And in that moment, it seems like it's good. But to be in touch with that inner sacred voice requires us to do something that you and I practice doing in India, which is getting up in the morning, spending sacred time with that voice and being able to discern, is that really my higher self calling me to do this act, or is that my voice interfering? Because we can get those two things confused, and it is only with practice that we're able to discern that inner voice versus that inner critical voice of ours.
So there's a distinction, as I'm hearing, between just positive thinking, because obviously we could hear our voice and say that some of it is positive, some of it is negative. So the distinction isn't just if you're looking at positive voices, then those positive voices mean that you're you know, connecting to your higher self, and all of the negative ones are not your self, and they're just coming from, let's say, lower self. Something else that you're sharing, it's not just the positive or the negative comment. It's also that at times positivity can be there, but in a short term, it could be something that is taking us at that moment, and it's occupying our time, or it's for short-term gratification, and it all sounds positive, but it's not necessarily toward the bigger cause or the bigger purpose that we have, and therefore there is a distinction between the two, and the access to find finding and recognizing that type of a voice is to listen to it and become aware of the distinctions, because of the quietness that you sit and in the silence, you go and kind of check it out. Like you become best friends with it. And therefore, the same way you know of someone who's your best friend for so many years, you kind of know their nuances and who they are. That's what you talk about. And in your book, you really talk about silence. Can you talk a little bit about in how to deepen that relationship with that part of us?
Yes. And I'm so glad that you asked that, because really, it is a best friend, because you need to be able to distinguish now, is this because I'm just excited about doing this? I'll give you an example. Someone asked me to engage in a project in the new year, and I took a second, and it sounded exciting. And then I said, no, because that's not a part of my calling. Could I do what they were asking me to do? Yes, I could. But when I take a second to reflect, or even longer, because the more comfortable you are with your inner source, that voice is speaking to you at all times, and you know inwardly whether it's the right thing to do. But I just took a moment, because while there were people who would have been blessed by me participating in this project, it was calling me to be off focused with my higher calling, a bigger purpose for right now in my life. So one of the ways that I nurture my relationship with, for me, it's God, but I say sacred source because I understand people have different names for their sacred source, is every morning I get up. And so whether it's quiet time, whether it's me going into prayer, or even reading some sort of devotional or theological reading to help me think more deeply about my relationship with sacred, I'm spending time with sacred. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm spending time with sacred when I ride down the street. Well, I feel like sacred is with me all the time. Let me be clear about that. But in terms of intentionally tuning in, when I'm riding down the street and deciding not to be on the phone, talking with someone, taking care of business, or listening to the radio, but just being in silence. Okay. It really is about spending time nurturing that relationship. Some ways we can do that is with things like breath prayers, where we're breathing in something simple as quietness and breathing out strength, or breathing in quietness and strength and breathing out confidence. You know, you can find the words that you'd like to say in those moments and see how spirit begins to speak to you. It does take practice. Journaling is a great way to spend quiet time, because we think very differently and we hear very differently when we write than when we're speaking. So those are just a few ways that I offer in terms of spending time with sacred.
And you speak a lot about a concept of a passion that we have, or a purpose that we have, and the higher purpose. I know that many people don't necessarily find or know what their purpose is, and then they feel high level of anxiety, as if everybody else got it, everybody else knows what their purpose is, and they're kind of like, you know, left out, and they have no idea how to figure out. And then sometimes I've noticed people where they stop looking or see things as mundane, and they won't bring themselves to really just experience the experience that's in front of them and enjoy the experience. And out of all the experience that are there and them being present at it, to allow to choose which one the cause, you know, the full on purpose is. Sometimes people think that, you know, their soul came in with a purpose, and because they feel lost in here, that they have to wait until a voice, a sacred voice, God tells them from high above what the purpose is. And unless they actually find that original purpose of the soul, everything else is useless. So there's a trap into this game a bit. And could you talk a little bit about what is a purpose, and how do we find or choose our, you know, life purpose, so that people don't just kind of fall into this game and keep kind of damning themselves about it, really?
Well, I think that's the first thing, is to not damn ourselves and just be.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, remember that my purpose was, for instance, to help people to manifest greatness or work on the wounds of religion. I didn't remember that as a child growing up, or even when I was getting my PhD. You know, I just said, I'm going to get this PhD. I'm going to work with inner city kids as a clinical psychologist and do all those things. But at the same time, I remained open. And let me just be clear. At each stage of our lives, we have perhaps a different purpose.
Exactly.
We're always evolving. If I live another 20 or 30 years, I perhaps will be doing something different at that point. So I just want to be clear with folks right now, your purpose, if you are working as a cashier, for instance, in a grocery store, your purpose right now might be to bring light and love to all the people that you meet who are coming through your line. So I don't want us to think it has to be that we're going out and we're getting ready to change the world by our actions. But each person we touch, we never know how much we're guiding them to be a better person, even in the next moment. So your purpose right then and there is just being the best version of yourself as you can be, and then being open to listen to what is your calling. So I want to just share with you that a bit of my journey. As I said to you earlier, I just assumed that I was going to get this PhD. And after you're done with the PhD and you're working with your ideal population, what else is there to do, right?
Yep. And we got it. We made it.
Exactly. And so when I was called to go into divinity school, and it certainly was a calling, I was floored, because I thought, what else do I need to do? I'm already serving. My life is service. But once I was able to really just let go, and I just said to Sacred, whatever you want me to do, I'm here, I'm available, I'm a vessel, because ultimately your calling will keep nagging at you.
Yeah.
You really can't run from it. And once I just availed myself to just whatever that next thing was, things began to unfold in a completely different way. And I began to say yes and to have, you know, many more experiences. And I just want to point out that when we do that, I was recalling the other day, if I had simply stayed with the population that I was working with, because I felt like I have this PhD, I have my job, I'm done, I'm set, I would not be able to touch as many lives as I'm touching right now. And so people who are struggling to try to find their purpose, sit with it and just connect with your inner source and think about what are the things that, one, you feel most passionate about in your life. And for many people, they've forgotten that. And so I often ask people to go back and do an exercise of where they're just looking at lifespan to see the things that they have really been the most successful and exuberant with, so that they can see, where does the light shine within you? And now how can we take that light and spread it to other people wherever you are in your corner of the world? So they don't have to be a Dr. Fujian or a Dr. Terrellyn. They just need to manifest their greatness wherever they are.
And I remember when I was kind of feeling lost and, you know, studying in different matters and then going and having different type of businesses and not feeling satisfied, although I was very successful financially, not feeling satisfied. The same thing you're saying, I thought about what is it that I'm so natural at that if you don't have to pay me money, I would do it for free. I won't do it for free now, but I'm just saying I'll do it for free. Right. I still do a lot for free, but it's something that I get joy after all day doing it. And if I have nothing else to do, I still go back and do it. And I saw that I had this essence that people just trusted to tell me and share with me their utmost level of secrets. And they knew that it would be kept with me. And it wasn't judgmental. It was just, you know, I got it. I give my opinion. And sometimes my opinion appeared to have judgments on it because we all are human and have judgments. But I wasn't judgmental. I had judgments like any other human that I like, dislike things. But my heart wasn't judgmental. So it allowed them just to share whatever it was that they needed to share. And I remember people would go to parties and do different things. And even at parties, I would just sit with somebody and you know, talk about it. And that was my excitement that, you know, this is what I had done. And I'm like, oh, that's just so natural. Like, this is who I am. And then obviously then I went back to school in order to become a therapist. But it's just, when you connect to that part of you that is so natural, that it tells you, like, we tell ourselves, this is who I am naturally. Now, I might not have the skills, and then obviously I had to go learn the skills of how to be a therapist, but it was a part of a being a natural essence of me that just held that space as I came in, which I will call the sacred place in a sense.
I so agree with you, because one of the most painful things to me is to see people get wedded in a job or career that they absolutely hate because they think that that's what they're supposed to do. And I will say to them, but what is the thing that brings you joy and brings you light? And I think those are the things that will help lead us to a purpose. We get stuck in this sort of fake world, as I call it, because, you know, to me, it's like, that's not reality, being in this rat race. There's something more to life than this. And so it's about taking that step back and saying, what am I natural at doing? You know, yes. And make people, and I resonate so much with you, because hearing people's stories and helping them to know the best part of themselves, despite whatever has happened to them. I get so much joy out of it. And for me, I've always been passionate about God too, even as a young child. And so it just seems like it's just so beautiful to be able to merge those two things and to say, there is a higher source that's out here that lives within us, is not out there in some realm somewhere. And you are a part of that. It dwells within you, because I think that if people could see their own inner divinity, they would actually be careful about what they do to themselves, what they allow other people to do to them, and what they do to other people. And then we would have a much better world if we could all tap into that.
Absolutely. We're talking to Dr. Tara Lynn Curry-Avery, the author of Sacred Intelligent. We'll be right back, and we're actually going to talk about what she talks about in her book about wounds of religion.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fushan Zain. You can get it now at Fushan.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Dr. Fushan Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fushan has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fushan.com. That's www.fushan.com.
Okay, we are back with Dr. Tara Lynn Curry-Avery, the author of Sacred Intelligence. We are going to talk about wounds of religion, which I told her in our break, I have so many of it. We're going to probably have to do a whole full show for you guys just to talk to me about wounds of religion. But beside me, tell us about wounds of religion and how it might impact people's day-to-day life.
So when I said to you earlier, I wondered, why was I being called to this divinity degree to become a pastor? It was something I fought for a very long time. And I fought it because I would always say church people are crazy. I grew up in church. I love church. I love God. So let me be very clear about that. But people bring their psychological wounds into church. And often those wounds are played out under the guise of religion.
Yes.
People also have ways of missing scriptural text or sacred text, and they do it in a way that supports their thinking and their beliefs. And those are wounds of religion. Now, some of these wounds are very, very subtle. Some of the wounds could be around issues of money is a big one. You know, there are many, many people out here who think they should have a life of poverty because being more spiritual, and that's living at a higher level of consciousness, for instance. And often in Christianity, people will say, well, Christ didn't have money. Christ went, you know, door to door on foot, right? And he just allowed other people to serve him in terms of food and clothing and shelter and all that, just things like that. And so as a result, when I find people who might be interested, for instance, in charging their worth, like you were just saying a little bit earlier, they'll say, oh no, I could help the poor. I should not charge X, Y, and Z, right? That's really a wound of religion to me, because people should be paid their worth. There's also scripture that supports that, but people often don't look at things like that. I see wounds of religion on a day-to-day basis. In fact, I just saw it on Facebook the other day when someone posted all of their medications on Facebook and said, I'm healed. I didn't need to take any of these prescriptions. All you have to do is pray. And it disturbed me so much. Do I believe in the power of prayer? Do I believe in the power of all of us putting our positive energy together in one form and wishing love and light and good health on other people? Of course I do. Have I seen it work? Of course I have. But I also know that spirit allows us to create medicines, for instance, to create therapy, for instance, to create forces for helping people. So it's a dangerous thing when we tell people you don't need medication. All you need to do is pray this away. That to me is a wound of religion. I see wounds of religion when people are not allowed to live out their true being and true essence of who they are, because people will tell them that there's something wrong with you for being the way you are. I see wounds of religion around an inability to even talk about these scars, or to even, I heard something the other day where this person who happened to be Jewish was saying that the rabbi said to them when he was like 8 years old, the sins of your fathers, your sins are on your father until you're 13 years old. So don't do anything that would cause your father to die.
Wow.
To an 8 year old.
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing to say, but we don't recognize those things as wounds because we just grow up hearing that. I see it as it relates to how people express themselves sexually, even in their own intimate one-to-one relationship. They become stunted in the way they express themselves. So there are a myriad of ways that people actually are impacted by the wounds of religion, and we don't want to talk about any of those ways.
There are a lot of dualities that I think human beings have, and it seems like they can also utilize the name of religion or some belief system in order to create and have their selfish agendas coming forward. And it's easy just to utilize something that there is, you know, you can't really have a tangible proof of it and extrapolate on it any way that you like in order to, create any agenda based on what you want from it. And, you know, if you gather enough people who would agree on that agreement with you, then you could, and if you're powerful enough, you could definitely use your power in order to, push or shove or place a burden or a blame on anyone who doesn't have that power. And I think that the name of religion gets used a lot on that. God is used a lot on that. I can see how much it can wound people and it could destroy people in that way. And it has around the world. We keep seeing it every day, how much and under the name of this, this gets, it affects everybody one way or another. And you could see these dualities. I mean, I remember I went to a Catholic French school, and as we were learning how Christ is love, and even if somebody, did something wrong to him, his voice was to say, just take the other cheek, or you know, turn the other cheek. Yeah. And then in the afternoon, if there was something on my backpack which the nuns didn't like or the teachers didn't like, they would beat the crap out of us. And it was like, what happened to turn the other cheek? You just told us. And then, you know, I was living in a Muslim country, which I was talking about peace and all of that. And then, you know, when I read all the scriptures and things that were there about the lives of a lot of the people, they were all war. So it was just such a duality consistently facing these two matters of these, you know, the Ten Commandments, and you know, Islam has 10 of them, and then all the value systems. And I finally just said, all the value systems are apparently similar. I'm just going to take those on, because those that's a way of, you know, living in an unintegrated way and an intentional way to be a good human being. And I'm not going to fall for the other ones that kind of wound me and upset me, and I have to consistently face the duality of those and try to make sense out of this, which is like there is no making sense out of it.
Right. So you a lot in those few words. I want to just address a couple of those. So one being that this whole idea of turn the other cheek, I want to pause on that one just for a moment, because all too often women and children remain in abusive relationships. And that is a huge wound of religion. Sometimes their pastors will even tell them to go home and be obedient to usually their male significant other or spouse, to go home and just be obedient. That, to me, is not what it means to turn the other cheek. Really, it's about forgiving, but forgiving does not mean that you stay in something that is right. Not good for you. So I just want to be very clear about that. The second thing is, you mentioned this word power. So while I individually, I work with people and I coach people privately, helping them to manifest their greatness, one of the other things that I do is I am a pastor of a church. And as a pastor of a church, I am very conscious of my power. Mm-hmm. Day to day, we may not think about it when we're in positions of leadership and authority because we get used to just moving throughout our lives. But there again, we have to be conscious.
Yes.
And we have to be intentional, because people will say things and do things for me as a pastor just because I am the pastor.
Yes.
And though I may not think in that way, I have to be conscious that they're thinking.
They do.
So that when I'm asking them to do something for me, like for instance, will you serve on this committee? I might say, if you want to serve on this committee, please don't do it just because I'm asking you. Do you have room and space in your life to do that? I have to be intentional with my words. Sometimes in churches, pastors, and especially, I think, male pastors in some churches sort of flirt with people in church, particularly the women, to get them to do things that they want them to do. And they may not mean any harm by it, but when you say, oh, Sister so-and-so, you sure are looking mighty pretty today. Could you do blah, blah, blah? Well, you're unintentionally using your power. Mm-hmm. And we have to be really careful. We have to be really careful when we appear to have a closer relationship with one person in the church than another.
Yes.
Because now then other people in church think, oh, I want to be a part of the pastor's inner crowd.
Yep.
These are the little things that we have to think about, this issue of power. And then I also think we have to ask ourselves the question, particularly as leaders, is this about me? Mm-hmm. Or is this about serving my higher power
right. And
higher self? So when those nuns are whacking you on the back because there's something on your backpack, that's not God-like.
Right.
So where do we get those sort of our understanding and interpretation from?
Now, part of your book title is Selfish and Shared Relationships. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? And we only have a couple of minutes, so tell us what you mean by this part, which is, and partly we talked about the selfish aspect of, you know, wanting to be who they are and gaining their own selfishness out of the way they relate to you. But say more about it.
So for me, just really quickly with selfish, and I know it's a provocative word, I want people to be selfish in the sense that they spend time with themselves, looking deeper into what are the things that make them tick, what are the ways in which they can manifest the best in who they are. Selfish does not mean that I'm going to be selfish to the point that I'm going to neglect everyone and everything else around me. If I spend time with myself, learning how to say no to those things that are not for me and yes to those things that are for me, and learning how to create positive relationships around me, in that way I can serve the world.
Got it. Perfect. Okay, we have 2 minutes. Tell the audience what you wish for them for the next year, 2019, and give them a hint in how it is that they can manifest what they want to manifest.
So what I would really love for you in the year of 2019 is to know that you are divinely created and loved unconditionally, to not listen to those voices that tell you anything less than. If you know and believe that, you can go out and manifest your greatness in 2019, and you can help others to manifest their greatness. So I invite you to just make it a habit of spending 5 to 15 minutes a day just sitting quietly with the sacred, and to do what actually Fujian talked about in the beginning of this program, writing out your intentions for the day that's going to lead you towards greatness, and then to write out for yourself, what do you want in 2019? Just answer that question tonight as you're reflecting. What do I want? Be clear about it, write the vision about it, and then go deep within, make it happen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing yourself with us at this big transitional day of going from 2018 to 2019. And it was a joy to have you and seeing your beautiful face again, and hopefully come back together somewhere in the world this year again and have amazing time. I always learn from you.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I broke a promise to you, which in front of everybody, I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I had promised that I was going to send you my book, Life Reset, and I didn't.
Yes.
This is a promise that I will do that on Wednesday, and okay. That's a promise.
Thank you. I'm going to be looking forward to it.
Awesome. For everyone who's with us, thank you so much. I hope that you've had an amazing 2018, and you're going to have an amazing 2019, because you're an amazing person, all of you. And I know that you can create a beautiful life for yourself and everyone around you. Happy New Year!